Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey now, Adam Reaver here from FU-Tone.com and EVHD Tuna. You're listening to Talking Metal.
All right. Before we get into the episode, I'm going to raise my cup here. Dash on the rocks, my friend. Dash vodka, the best stuff out there, the best vodka. They put so much care into the fermentation of this stuff. I mean, 3 days for the wheat, 3 weeks for the raisins. Absolutely incredible. And that, you know, there's a reason that it's so smooth. It's because of the care they put into it. I'm thinking of asking Hank to come on to tell us about how they do this, you know. The care they put into everything, even the water. Put fine detail into cleansing that, making it so perfectly. Even on the way to the bottle lining, the vodka is filtered through a packed bed of crushed coconut hulls to 1 micron absolute. Most, if not all, vodkas are filtered through a bed of charcoal. I mean, Dash does it through coconuts. So incredible, so much detail. A reason it's so good. Check it out, Dash Vodka. Link through the show notes. DashVodka.com. Check it out, my friends. Only the best vodka here on Talking Metal. We definitely love our Dash, and we definitely love our patrons, the people who support us, the people who make this show happen. We're going for 100, and when we get to 100, I will start doing a bi-weekly video show. And I'm not talking about just me talking into my iPhone. I'm talking about a produced high-end video show for the patrons first off, and then it'll go live to the public a day or two later. So we need to get to 100 patrons in order for that to happen, and that's because I'm financially going to have to bring in people and pay people to help me with it. But in the meantime, we're making progress. We're slowly but surely building the army of patrons on Patreon, and I just want to give a shout out to every single one of you guys. Come on, guys. We're almost at 50. There's got to be some people out there who can afford $2 a month to get me to 50. We're at 48 right now. And those 48 people are all very important to me. And they are Steve Hoker, Mike Jones, Steven Saylor, Dan Gerwan, Metal Dan, Brad Dahl, Jean-Francois Blah, Chris Riley, Matt Carroll, James Bennett, Ron Keel, Matt Street, Fred Rutz, David Gray, Drake, Jason Seth, Tommy Anderson, Jerry from Long Island, Sam Soupy, Joe Ryan from California, Hank Reeves, John Bovary, Leo from Alaska, Andrew Miller, Steven Rodriguez, Denny Striegel, that's my dad, it's his birthday today, happy birthday, Dad, Jeremy Weltman, Kenny McCrimmon, Jerry from Salt Lake City, Gregory Muse, Johan Erdestrom, Sean Richmond, Mario Charance, Glenn Watson, Gene Eugene DX, Joey Von Cherry, Victor Guzman, Anthony Mackey, Huckney Jacobson, John Simpson, Patrick Sabin, John Barron, Blue Walsh 21, Madison Hatter, Alan Janssen, Ed Ferguson, and Seth B. You guys are amazing. Wow. What an army. And you are the reason that Talking Metal is still going here today. I guarantee it. You really are. Thank you for everything you guys do. Let's go listen to some Talking Metal and drink some Dash right now. All right, so we got two people on the show tonight. We got Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show, and we got Adam from FU Tone. He's going to be talking with me, too. It's two great interviews. I've known Adam for a while. I've known Chris for a while, too. So always fun to hang out with people I like, and that's what we're doing on this episode of Talking Metal. Let's go to the news. Brian Johnson biography due in October. That could be a really good read. I hope he's honest. I hope he doesn't shy away from some of the rough spots he's been through with AC/DC, because there have been those. I mean, we got to remember he was always one of the three songwriters, and then at some point, like back in the 80s, I think late 80s, early 90s, his name was removed from all songwriting credits. That was weird, right? And then of course the whole thing where he left and was having hearing trouble and Axl Rose took over. So I hope we get an honest biography from them, because AC/DC has always been a very, very private band. Very private, much like Iron Maiden. So I hope we can get an insight and an honest look at things, and it just isn't all roses, if you know what I mean, when it comes to AC/DC, because I'd like to see a little behind the curtain on the inner workings of one of my favorite bands. We have a headline on Blabbermouth. Van Halen's record label wanted band to change name after replacing David Lee Roth with Sammy Hagar. Wow, why is this even a headline? I mean, this has been something I think we've known for decades, right? I know they went into it in the Ted Templeman book that Greg Renoff wrote, and I don't know. I didn't know that was a secret. I could have sworn back in the day Eddie talked about that they were being pressured to change the name and they didn't want to. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. And Steve Vai and Jason Bonham added to Little Kids Virtual Benefit event. It's a national nonprofit Little Kids Rock event, and it'll feature a diverse multi-genre lineup of singers, songwriters, and musical talent. And it raises money for the Hot Topic Foundation. What in the world is that? Hot Topic Foundation. But anyways, it's all about keeping music alive for kids, getting them playing instruments and being involved in music, which I think is a really important thing. So cool. Little Kids Rock. You can check them out on Twitter. Little Kids Rock, at Little Kids Rock. All right, so let's do this. Let's talk television, guys. You know, I had the fortune of many times, including this past summer, working in television, producing hard rock and heavy metal content, going way back to my VH1 days, to Talking Metal on Fuse, to working on the final seasons of That Metal Show, to more recently working on Metal Crush for Sci-Fi, which was a series that was on over the summer. If you have missed those, I wrote and produced all those. Whitney Moore was the host. They turned out great, man. They're up on YouTube, full episodes on YouTube. And then we kind of aired alternate content on the actual Sci-Fi channel. It was a great experience. And unfortunately, the president of the company, who is the guy I worked with and brought me in to do that, who is a friend of mine, he is no longer there. So I kind of doubt at this point they're going to bring those back, which is a shame because they turned out great and we definitely had more ideas for them. But that's just how TV is. You know, I'm working at A&E Networks now, kind of doing a more kind of behind the scenes job. It's a long story. Maybe I'll get into it some other time. But good gig. Happy to be there. That's what TV is. You jump from gig to gig, which isn't always ideal. But when you do have the gig, it usually pays pretty well. So no complaints at the current moment for me. But, you know, my dream was, and I guess it still is, to always, you know, produce and even host and be a part of hard rock and heavy metal TV content. And I think now the time is just ripe for that with the streaming services. And a couple of years back, I think 2018, I did extensive research. I was very close. I wanted to get in a streaming app. I was kind of inspired by the Night Flight app, if you've seen that or experienced that, and wanted to see what it would take to bring that content in a streaming, you know, Netflix style, Hulu style app form that you could watch on your couch or in your bed, watching your big screen TV, how that would actually play out. And I spent many, many hours on it. Even John helped me a little bit with it, John Astronomy. But it was a lot of work. And for the way it to happen like I wanted it to happen, I thought and was told it would take a ton of money. So I kind of abandoned those thoughts. I actually did reach out to some backers and I spoke with some big, big people just to get their advice, but just decided that it was, let's just put it this way. I wasn't about to mortgage my house to make it happen, because it cost a lot of money to get these outside companies to give you placement on Apple TV and Roku and all these other platforms. But I wish it would happen. You know, we've had Gimme Metal, which announced that they were bringing back Ricky Rackman and The Ball. And I guess they've done an episode or two of that, but you can't see it anywhere. I mean, they're not on Apple TV. They're not on Roku. They're not on Amazon Fire TV. So they're like, oh, you got to watch it on your phone and stream it on your TV. I don't know if you guys have done that. It's not a smooth viewing experience. At least not for me. You know, text messages popping up, the screensaver goes on, you got to change your settings to this and that. It's a big freaking pain in the ass. What I want is an app that I can just watch. So luckily, people are working on this. Again, I kind of took a step back from it. John keeps telling me I should go back and revisit it, but it was just too expensive, too much work. I got my hands full with a family, a podcast, and a job, you know. So it's, I don't know. And I'm not somebody who's going to take out a $300,000 loan to do something. It would even cost more than that to do the way I want to do it. So we're going to talk to Chris about that, because he's bold, man, and he's gonna try something. And it sounds like, if he can pull it off, which I surely hope he does, it could be very, very cool. So let's talk to Chris Aiken right now, and then I'm going to come back and talk some more about some other real cool content that's going on. Because, like I said, it is time for some sort of revolution. We need rock back on the TV. We see U2 and Guns N' Roses and Metallica filling stadiums, man. I mean, not during COVID, obviously. But people love this music, you know? So why, when I turn on the Grammys or I turn on the MTV Music Awards, hardly anybody's even playing guitars anymore, man? I mean, I'm not even talking about just hard rock, man. No one's even playing guitars. I like it when I see Taylor Swift play a guitar. Wow, somebody's playing a freaking instrument. Sure, it's a couple chords, you know, but I'm not going to knock anybody who is on a major platform singing and playing, because there's a market for this stuff, man. There really is. And it's sad that the streaming outlets really aren't embracing it. I thought for sure Apple TV would. I mean, Apple Music was in Apple's DNA, you know, going way back. But, you know, they really haven't with their original content. I mean, sure, they aired a Beastie Boys documentary, which was cool, don't get me wrong. But it's like, we're not seeing a lot of music out of their original contents. But anyways, there is another company I want to talk about, Hit Parader, which has launched. And they are doing some real cool content, video content. So we'll talk about that more on the flip side of this interview with Chris Aiken, who's going to tell us what he's planning to do to bring us some great streaming content, hard rock and heavy metal content. Here we go. My conversation with Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show.
Hey,
Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and checking in with us once again from the Classic Metal Show, Chris Aiken. Chris, how are you, man?
Good, man. How you been?
Been all right. Been hanging in there, staying busy, and I know you are always staying busy. I wanted to get an update from you about what's happening, of course, the Classic Metal Show, but I know you're doing other shows now, too, right?
I am. When the pandemic started, you know, I needed to keep more busy than normal, I guess.
Right.
So I didn't go crazy. So I actually went on this interview tear where I started doing interview after interview after interview, doing 5, 6, 7, 10 a week. And out of it, I launched another podcast called Aftershocks TV. It's myself and Matt Hartnett, who's also the co-host of Bob Nalbandian's Shockwave Skull
right.
Sessions podcast.
Yes. Yep.
And from there, it just kept growing. You know, we started doing that, and we did, I think 120 interviews in a year.
Wow. And that's insane, man. That's great.
It's been crazy how many we've done. But then, you know, I just kind of got the bug from there, and I saw a lot of the censorship that's going on with the big tech stuff, and I didn't want to get caught up in that. So I went ahead and just built my own platform, which is the CMS Podcast Network, cmspn.com, you know, and put my show on that and put Aftershocks on that. And then I recruited a couple more shows, Talk To Me and Poppet's Corner and Nalbandian Show as well. And so that led to yet another piece of the puzzle. And then now I have been graciously granted Heavy Metal Television from Eric Braverman, who started it 8 years ago, and I'm getting ready to relaunch Heavy Metal Television.
Cool. Well, I do want to talk about that because that sounds really exciting, and it sounds like something we need as heavy metal fans. But sure. Before we go there, so you mentioned that I forget exactly how you said it, but there's a lot of pushback and censorship, I guess is the word you used, from corporate. Can you go into that a little bit? Because I, in the last year, experienced getting thrown off of Spotify and iHeartRadio and had to kind of revamp the way I do my show and jump through all sorts of hoops to get reinstated. I mean, and spend money doing it. It was a big pain in the ass. But is that what you're referring to, or is it something else?
It is. There's that piece of it. There's definitely, I'm imagining for you, it was about music content that they,
yes. Yep.
You know, and that's one piece of, you know, they, for whatever reason, they refuse to honor fair use, even if it is fair use.
Right.
So, you know, that's one piece of it. And then obviously we shake things up on Classic Metal Show, and, you know, some of the topics we talk about don't necessarily align politically with, you know, what YouTube is willing to let on their platform. So, you know, I just didn't want to lose my show is really what it came down to. And, you know, I am a tech, you know, first and foremost, one of my many businesses is as a owning an IT company. So I built my own platform. I built my own RSS feeds. I built my own, you know, distribution network for it. And, you know, I mean, we still have a YouTube channel and we still have a Facebook and, you know, all that other stuff, but I went ahead and just built platforms for everything. I built our own social media thing, built it into our website so that I could say whatever I want and YouTube or Facebook or Twitter or whatever can't censor it. I don't want to be censored. And, you know, I have the great fortune of being technical enough to where I can actually fight back a little bit instead of just accepting what they're giving. So,
right on.
Yeah, I definitely did build it. And you know this, Mark, you know, us heavy metal guys, we're always rebels. So I'm never going to just bow down to the down and do what I'm told. I always have to rebel a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I mean, for me, it was like, I had made this promise that I wouldn't continue the podcast if I couldn't play music. However, when it came down to making that decision, I ultimately had to kind of go back on that. So, sure. You know, we've eliminated all music from this show. So, and you know, the thing with Spotify is I do feel like it is becoming more of a destination for people who want to get the shows. So that's kind of,
And if you use Anchor, you know, just to give you a piece, if you use Anchor for as your podcast distribution, which is owned by Spotify, you can actually use music. You can put music pieces in on through Anchor. Now I haven't done it, but I mean, we do use Anchor as well. And I haven't done it yet, but I do see that you can add music if you want to. So
yes, I've heard that. It does sound like it's a whole kind of additional step and is a little time consuming, but yeah, I have heard that. So something to look into, definitely. But let's talk about what you mentioned earlier, because this is something I'll admit to you that I've actually kind of looked into building a app that would stream heavy metal content. And ultimately, at the end of the day, somebody who's not probably as tech savvy as you, it seemed like it was going to be a tremendous amount of money. And I kind of bailed on the whole idea of it. So having said that, I do think this is a market, or there's an audience out there for something like this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to hear about how you are going to go about doing this. This is a relaunch, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's been there. It's still there now. If you go to heavymetaltelevision.com, you can see it just streams. It just plays videos right now. It's a jukebox. And Eric Braverman, who people know from Flotsam and Jetsam, and he did a Metallica documentary and stuff. I mean, Eric's a character, but he launched this 8 years ago and just didn't pursue it fully, I guess. He quickly learned that it was a lot more work than he was, ready to do or was able to do or whatever. But I don't know. I approached him about 8-10 months ago and just said, hey, let me, if you're not going to really use this, let me use it. So he gave me the keys to the castle and said, take it over, do what you want to do with it. So now I'm going to repackage it, and I don't want to say I'm using the MTV model, but I'm using elements from the MTV model, the stuff that we grew up on. I'm definitely going to have metal videos streaming, most of the day. And I'm going to have shows, little short shows, that are metal focused. And right now it's going to start with the video portions of the podcasts that are on my network to show off different interviews of bands and whatnot. And we're going to have band takeover shows. I've already got a couple of those in the works. I'm going to bring back the old news segments, that you heard it here first news.
Right.
And I've been lining up various people to do that. And some are famous, some are not, but I just want to kind of bring back that metal thing. Cause I see guys like Gene Simmons ranting on and on about how rock is dead, metal is dead, and blah, blah, blah. And it's just not true. There's a ton of it out there, but we're missing that element to deliver it to people the way you and I grew up. We didn't know all these bands, but we heard them on MTV and we liked them, and we're like, oh, cool. Who is this band, Extreme or whatever? And then we'd see the video and then we'd go buy the album. That was how it worked. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I'm looking to do is to put it out there once again. And I'm going to build it. The tech side of me is going to do it the right way. It's going to be online, and it's going to be on Roku, and it's going to be on Amazon Fire Sticks. It's going to be on Apple TV. So there'll be channels for it, just like Netflix or whatever today. You'll literally be able to just log in and watch heavy metal television.
Right. Wow. There's a lot to unpack there. What you just said, let's start with, the Gene Simmons rock is dead thing. I'm with you to a point, because I think it's all about the outlets don't cover this. I mean, I watched part of the Grammys last night. Why? I don't know, but I did it, and it just, everything like hard rock is completely removed. It is such as an old rock guy, and I would hope for younger people too, it just looked like such a foreign environment to me, and completely ignoring even the Van Halen tribute, I thought was lame. I mean, it should have been something much bigger and better. I think part of the issue is that we don't have outlets for this community to thrive. So I think what you're planning to do sounds really exciting. And it also sounds like a hell of a lot of work. And let's talk about watching it. You said I have Apple TV. So what would I do? Would I go download the Heavy Metal Television app to watch it? Is that how it's going to happen?
That's how it's going
to
be.
Do I have to pay for that? Like what? No,
Nope. It's going to be, I mean, it's going to be, I'm going to run it like a television network. There's going to be sponsors. There's going to be commercials. You know, I mean, it's not going to be 24/7, no breaks. Everything's free. And I, you know, and I shift $6,000 a year into paying licensing fees. You know, I obviously have to sell it, and I'm going to sell it the right way. I've got an ad team that I'm putting together, and I'm going to have them doing their work to make it go. I do not want to charge for it at all. I want people to be able to watch it just like we did in the old days. Yeah. I mean, technically, yeah, we paid a cable company or something, but you know, for me and you in today's metalhead that doesn't get fed a lot of metal, you know, daily, I want there to be an app. I want there to be an app on any system that you have, Roku, Amazon, Apple, you know, whatever, NVIDIA. I will make those things available so that people can definitely you install the app and just like you do now with your Apple TV. You want to watch a movie on Netflix, you click Netflix and you watch it.
Right. You
know, same exact concept is what I'm going to have there.
And it is, you know, from the research I did, it is costly and expensive to get your apps into all these different platforms. I was enjoying an app called Night Flight, which had a lot of really cool old shows on it. But then when I switched from Amazon Fire over to Apple TV, it wasn't there. So, and I know that's because to get on all these different platforms, there's different things you have to do. So to hear that it's going to be on all these platforms is incredible. And I will go a little bit further. I mean, I think free is great, but listen, I pay for, you know, Netflix and Disney and Hulu. I was paying for Night Flight for a while. I would be happy to pay $5 a month to stream content about the music that I love. I think that's you know, a no-brainer for me.
Believe me, I've looked into it and I've thought about it, and the real negative to it is people are so used to free right now with Spotify or YouTube Music or just YouTube in general that it is hard to convince them to do it. I know us hardcores will do it, but you know, getting I may get there at some point. I'll just be honest. It may get there at some point where I have like a premium tier and a free tier. I'm thinking more on that level than just making it a straight tier. What I might do is just have a non-commercial tier and a commercial tier and do it that way. I don't know yet. I really have to see how it develops, but in the end, you know, there's a lot of pieces to start charging for it. You know, one of the big hurdles I'm having right now is getting a lot of the labels on board. And, you know, if I don't have all of the metal labels immediately on board, it's pretty hard to charge people when they're watching, you know, a lot of bands that they don't know. So,
right.
You know, it's going to be a work in progress. Believe me, I don't think when I actually launch it here in a couple of months that it's going to be like, well, this is the final product and this is how it's always going to be. It's going to definitely develop over time. But what I'm hopeful of is that unlike other platforms that have tried and fallen apart, you know, this is being run by somebody that loves metal and loves the product and is not just money hungry. You know, I make money from my other gigs. So I'm not, the focus is not the finance. And I hope that's going to leave it open for me to make a better product first before I really start, you know, acting like a business guy and really cracking down on it.
Right on. Cool. And as far as the actual content goes, I mean, you mentioned music videos, and I suppose we would see a music video by like a new artist that's out on Frontiers, Black Swan or something like that.
Sure.
But then would we also see classic corporate metal videos? Like, would we see one by Metallica or something like that? Is that something that's in the cards, or is that just something that's too hard to get the rights to?
It's not that hard to get the rights to, really. I mean, if they've released it, and Metallica would be hard, but for the most part, you can, if you reach out and you make a deal with, you know, and I don't want to get too businessy, but all these companies have distribution outlets, whether it's the Orchard or Blood Blast or whatever. If you work out a deal with those distribution networks, they're going to provide you whatever you ask for that they distribute. And, you know, so yeah, there will definitely be, it's not going to only be new stuff. Like even if you go there right now, there's stuff by like Dio and Sabbath and AC/DC and whatnot. And we're already paying. I mean, we're paying the licensing, so nobody's going to really complain as long as you're paying the licensing for it. I know there's, you know, certain bands, and certainly AC/DC is one that I probably need to look into. But, you know, there's for the most part, if you're paying the licensing, nobody's really complaining has been the methodology that I've been told. And then, you know, and I'm trying to go from there to doing. Getting the distribution deals with the right distribution networks. And, you know, so yeah, you would, to answer your question, I know I'm talking a lot, but yeah, you are definitely gonna see old classic videos as well as new stuff.
Very cool. You know, it's interesting. I interviewed Ricky Rackman recently, and he mentioned that he thinks, I haven't heard any further news on it, but he thinks he's kind of going to bring back the Headbangers Ball and call it the Ball. But it sounded like his platform for doing it was, he wasn't ready to announce it. And I'm not sure he has a platform ready, but it would be great if we could bring back some of that, you know, classic vibe that we used to get from that show, or even people like that on the channel. What shows are you thinking could appear on the network down the road?
Well, I mean, like I said, at the start, I'm going to have the various shows that I have on my platform, on my podcast platform, because we all do video shows. So it's going to, we're going to have a best of the classic metal show segment, just like an hour. And it'll just be like a musical segment every week. It will not be all the political nonsense and all the other stuff that we do. It'll just be the musical type segment there. And then we're going to have Talk to Me on there, which is more your modern metal type of stuff, you know, your Five Finger Death Punch and whatnot on his show. We're going to have Bob Nalbandian's Shockwave Skull Sessions, which is going to be kind of like your historical look at metal, your 70s and early 80s type stuff. You're going to have Poppet's Corner, which focuses primarily on like extreme thrash and death metal. And Aftershocks, which kind of fills in the blanks of everything that I just listed. You know, we interview everything from rock bands to modern bands and everything in between. So I'm going to have those shows at the start, depending on how quickly the labels and the label distributions come together. I'm going to have two other shows that I'm planning to launch. I already have a host for one of them. That's going to be like a new music or a new video, like half hour to an hour show each week of just new video, not necessarily new bands, but new videos, whether it's September Morning or Saxon, you know, if they have a new video, we'll run that. And then I have another show that I'm working on putting together, and don't hold me to this name. It won't stick because it sounds dated and old, but for the moment I'm calling it More Than Words, which is going to be a half hour each week of just lyric videos, because those are important today. And they're super, super prevalent everywhere. It seems like every band that does a release now, they have a three video run up to their album. And the middle video is usually a lyric video. So, you know, I want to, you know, the bands, again, they're spending money on these things to get them produced. So why not focus on them? And they are getting better. You know, it's not like when they first started doing lyric videos where it's just words on a screen. A lot of them have cool backgrounds and stuff. So those are the six that I'm looking at to start. And then I'm going to have bands that are going to do like takeover shows where they can, you know, they'll have like a 2 hour block to play videos and, you know, do some intros and outros and promote their wares and whatnot. And there's also going to be concerts that are going to be on it. Some pre-recorded, some live. You know, I've actually worked out a deal with a studio to do some live performance stuff right on Heavy Metal Television. So there's a lot of there's a lot of programming in the works, so it's coming together. It's
really exciting. As a viewer, I can't wait. When are we thinking, Chris, that this will hit?
It looks pretty much like February 15th.
Okay.
You know, I have some some legal stuff that I have to take care of first. And I actually hired a publicist to handle promoting it. That's another thing that I thought that heavy metal television, I thought when it first launched 8 years ago, I thought it had a great, you know, I thought it would be great then, but it wasn't promoted properly or enough or whatever. And so I went and I hired a publicity firm to help me with the publicity. I mean, I know a lot of people, but I don't know everybody. And, right. And I just figured it's probably better if I just go with a publicist and let them promote it. And I'll just tell them what I want to promote every week. So, you know, I literally do have a team in place to kind of try and launch this thing. And it's, I would say May 15th is a pretty hard launch date is what it looks like at this point.
Okay. So yeah, you said February, but you're talking May.
May 15th.
Okay. Yeah. May 15th. Okay. This year. Great. Very cool. I cannot wait. And I will be watching for sure, man. And let's see, you said over 100 some interviews this past year. What are some of the ones that jump out as your favorites?
I interviewed a band called War Kings. This is one of my favorites of all time. And I know nobody knows this band, but, they're one of these like theatrical bands from Sweden, Norway, Switzerland, somewhere over there. And the guy, he postponed on me twice because he didn't have his costume. He wanted to do the interview in full costume and in full character. And the character is he's a Norwegian Viking or something.
Nice.
And so he came in character, and I just, every question I asked him, I stayed in character with him. Asked him questions about Vikings and if he watched the Vikings TV show, if it made him feel like he was watching home movies. And you know, I just literally went into character with this guy and asked him who would win in a fight between them and Gwar. You know,
right.
I just went into full character mode and just did that. And that was probably my most fun I've had in a while doing interviews, but you know, they're all fun. I like interviewing the old guard. Being honest, I like interviewing the new guard a lot more because they're just so much more excited and interesting and less jaded. You know, they're way more willing to just tell you what's really going on. So, you know, bands like Diabology, who I interviewed recently, they're a thrash band out of LA, just good kids, young, you know, like 20, 21 year old young kids. Mariah Formica from the band Plush, interviewed her. She's a sweetheart and, you know, again, has a lot of energy and a lot of excitement toward the project. So a lot of cool stuff, man. It's been a fun year, and I certainly have interviewed a ton of bands.
That's awesome. And I think what you hit upon there at the end with younger bands being out there, and that's something I've been preaching for a while now, that we can't just have, you know, 50, 60, 70 year old guys up there on stage. It's just not sexy. You know, we need the young kids up there rocking in order to keep this art form alive. And that's why I'm really excited for the relaunch of heavy metal television, because it sounds like we're going to get the classic stuff, but there's also going to be something that helps push the up and coming artist.
Sure. Yeah, I mean,
it's awesome stuff.
It's definitely going to be mix of old and new, and you know, just like the old MTV and the old Headbangers Ball.
Right on.
I'm pushing the new. I want the new stuff. I want the. You know, I want to see metal continue. I don't think it died. You know, with Korn and Disturbed. I think there's been a ton of new music, and just people don't realize it's there.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. Chris, always great talking with you. And please keep us posted on heavymetaltelevision.com. It sounds like the apps are on the way for Apple TV, Roku, and all that. Yeah. I will be one of the first to download it as soon as it's available and start watching. Yeah. Can't wait.
Heavymetaltelevision.com is the actual channel itself. Like if you don't want to see what's going on the channel at all, you just go to heavymetaltelevision.com and it loads in full screen and you hit play and it's playing on your screen. If you want the information about the shows and highlights from the shows, and you know, there's a bunch of little video things on the site itself, that's heavymetaltelevision.net.
Oh, so, okay. All right.
Cool. .netforinfo.com if you just can't wait and you want to go. And it's actually live in a beta right now if people want to check it out. So by all means, go.
Cool. We'll link them through the show notes at talkingmetal.com. And Chris Aiken of the Classic Metal Show and many other fun things like heavy metal television. Cannot wait. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, man.
Always good to catch up with Chris. Thanks for joining me, Chris. And we will have the site, the streaming site that you are working on, linked through the show notes. And we can't wait to see where you go with it. Please keep us posted. I personally think you got a lot of work cut out for you. But man, if anybody can pull it off, I'm sure it's you, because you definitely got some drive and a hard work ethic. So good luck, my friend. And please keep me posted. Another good friend of mine, Josh Bernstein, he has, along with Matt Pinfield and some other cool people, has launched a new production company called Hit Parader. And they are a content creation company, and they have money behind them. Josh is a good friend of mine. We hang out a lot and drink and talk rock here in Maplewood, New Jersey, where we both live. And he just wrapped the first season of a show that he is producing for Hit Parader, the production company Hit Parader, not really connected to the old Hit Parader, but they have that name, and it's called No Cover, and it is awesome. I know bands that have been on it. They wrapped it just recently in Los Angeles. And basically what happens is bands get up there and they play no cover songs. It's strictly originals. And, you know, sure, in the vein of The Voice or American Idol, they're voted onward, they're given advice, they're critiqued by a panel of judges, which is like Gavin from Bush and Alice Cooper and Lizzie Hale and a host of other people who are up there as judges. And it's rock, man. Rock is back. And I asked Josh, I said, well, where's this going to air? Are you guys going to get an app on Apple TV or what? And they're still working on that. They, I guess, have an Amazon Fire channel ready to go. But maybe I shouldn't even say that. We'll wait to find out where we can see this. I also think it's a good possibility they could just simply shop it once it's produced and get picked up by, you know, an actual station like Access or something like that. But I cannot wait to see No Cover, produced by Hit Parader. Josh Bernstein, one of the producers on that, and he used to be the creative director at Revolver back in the day, and he also ran the site called Loudwire for a long time. So always doing something. He's got his hands on a lot of stuff. Real great guy. So cannot wait to see No Cover. And yeah, man, and that's what we got to do. We got to get some apps on Apple TV, and it sounds like Chris Aiken gets this. He's not like the people at Give Me Metal who think people are going to actually stream stuff off their phone and onto their TV and enjoy it like that. So there you go. Chris, hopefully he'll keep us posted, and I'll keep you posted on what I hear about the Hit Parader content that's coming out. And hopefully, you know, listen, Gimme Metal, if they can get it together and get an app going, I think that's the way to go. The more the merrier, the more content we have to enjoy, the better. High-end content, I think, is key too, and that's, I know, what Hit Parader is going to bring us, some really produced stuff that is sounds really exciting. I can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see what Chris Aiken is up to with his heavy metal TV stuff too. So here we go. We are going to talk to Adam from FU Tone, and FU Tone is a company that just builds great, great stuff for your guitar, and we're going to have Adam explain that to us. Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and we are talking with Adam Reaver of a great company, FU Tone, a guy who's worked on one of my guitars, and
has worked on so many guitars that it's just unbelievable. I can see them behind him in the Zoom call that we currently have going on here. And Adam, great to see you, man. How are you?
I am good. It is always great to see you. And if you remember, do you remember the last time I saw you?
I was trying to think. I mean, I know we are always running into each other backstage. There was the Prudential Center.
Forget the shows. I'll refresh your memory. So we do always bump into each other at shows everywhere, tri-state area. But I was walking through Penn Station a year ago.
Right.
And you were on the phone. And I literally walked right past you and I stopped and walked backwards.
Yeah.
And gave each other like the bro hug.
Right.
And then you had to go on your call. I had to get on a train. And
yeah.
It was like a 2-second flyby. I was like, oh, it was so nice to see him.
Right. I do remember that. Yeah. I feel like I was in an intense conversation on the phone. Yeah, I'm not sure. But I do remember that. And it is great to catch up with you again. And I'm real hopeful that the next time I see you will be at a show. Because
at our normal venue. We'll bump into each other at catering somewhere and be like, dude.
Right on. So when I was working as one of the producers on that metal show on their final run of shows, I got to know you because I was doing this thing called That Metal Gear. And it was like just about every artist we talked to, when we go through the guitar, we'd get to your gear on their guitar. So, and I mean, you've worked with so many different people all the way up to the top. Eddie Van Halen, who, of course, we got to talk about what you've done with him. But let's start off with you. How did you get into working on guitars? What's a little bit of your history? If we could, I know it's a long history and there's a lot there, but give us the 3 to 4 minute bio, if you can.
I'll give you a very brief intro to it. And it's interesting. And I was talking about this the other day with someone. I had just moved to a new high school. I didn't know a person in there. I was horrified. And I'm walking through the halls and I find the other long hair kid in the school. Right. And we kind of just like, hey, you know, the long hair bro thing. And we started hanging out and he played guitar and he got me into it. I'll save that longer story for another day. But I got into it with this friend in my first year of high school who went on to become a giant in the guitar industry. And we were kids in the 80s. So to give you an idea, this was 1981 when I met him. So ninth grade, 1981. And I think that was a turning point year, that era where guitars really started to change.
I was actually going to say that same thing. I mean, 81, 82, we really saw.
That was the revolution. I call it the revolution. Before that, you had a Fender Strat or a Gibson Les Paul, and then everything else was like a C brand. You know, it was all just like knock off this and junk and this and that for the most part. And that's when it started to turn. And that's when guys started to build a better mousetrap. That's when guys like Wayne Charvel and Grover Jackson, you know, and these guys started making better guitars, and companies like ESP were coming on, and, you know, you had Hamer and Kramer, and, you know, Ibanez was coming on, and the tide started turning, man. And it wasn't, you know, the big stars weren't just playing the two big brands anymore, but these companies were based on hot rodding and building a better mousetrap, building a better guitar, making it do things. And I think that entire industry was born out of one guy. And you already mentioned, you know, Eddie Van Halen, who just said, you know, I want something more. This doesn't do what I need it to do. And I think what he did on his own with just, you know, the first Frankenstein guitar and, you know, shoving a humbucker into a Strat style guitar and, you know, getting that whole vibe going, that created an entire industry and spawned, you know, hundreds of imitators and guys chasing it. But the guitars started to change, and the guitars of the guitar heroes of that era, when you look back and you look at, you know, like the DeMartinis and the Lynches and, you know, the guys that really, Randy Rhodes and, you know, these guys weren't playing you know, the same stuff off the shelf that
right.
everyone that came before them played.
But so, back to you. Yeah, so you're in high school, right? Yeah.
And I start playing guitar with this friend of mine, and I bought my first guitar, which was a cheap $200 Hondo Flying V. And somewhere in my archives of pictures, I'll find the picture of this. The only thing left of that guitar was the wood. You know, it was, you know, a changed pickup. I had a Duncan Invader in the bridge. I put a Mighty Mite triple coil in the neck. I had a Kaler tremolo. I had changed knobs, changed to da, 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 da. I spent.
How old are you at this time? You're still a freshman in high school or a little beyond
14,
that?
14, 15, yeah. right around there. Those first two years. And I spent even more time tinkering with my guitar than I did playing it. And, you know, thank God, because it became my career later.
Yeah.
I would take it apart, put it back together. I would change a part. I would mess something up. I would break it. I would ruin it. And, you know, out of necessity, need to figure out how to fix it. Back then, we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have instructions. The companies hung you out to dry. They didn't tell you anything. And we were just kids sitting in the garage with a couple of basic hand tools, messing with guitars.
Seeing what
trying happens. Trying to get it to do different stuff. Yeah.
It really is amazing. And in some ways, you know, setting up a guitar or even learning your favorite guitar solo of a song, a lot of kids don't realize that, yeah, back in those days, we were doing stuff like slowing down the record or I'm sure you were doing all that too, but you were probably experimenting with guitars. And I can imagine that there were a lot of mistakes that you did on guitars back in those
ruined
days.
Ruined a ton of shit.
Yeah,
ruined a ton of shit. And, you know, you it was learning trial by fire. You know, you took a shot to try to figure it out, you know, especially when all the crazy tremolo stuff started coming out and, you know, how do you make this work? How do you make it float level? How do you intonate it right? How do you get it to play right and stay in tune? You know, it was a mystery because, like I said, the companies didn't help you. You know, it was like, here's your stuff. Have a nice day.
Right.
Good luck.
Right on. So at what point do you go from messing around with your own guitar to maybe working on a buddy's guitar or helping some of the local bands out? Like, what's the next phase?
It's funny because I was so late to the game as a player. And like I said, so my new best friend in high school was already miles above where I was, obviously, as a player. And I'm just learning to play, but I'm hanging out, you know, I'm hanging out at dude's band practices.
Right.
You know, this and that. Then I finally got my first band, you know, which was like the shitty band. But I was still, you're in that circle. These are your boys. These are your friends. And we all shared information. Everyone was supportive and tried to help each other. And, you know, there was, you know, not that, you know, secretive society of like, I know this and you don't, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, man, I learned how to change a pickup. Let me show you, you how to solder these three wires to the spot. You know, it sounds funny now, but that was a big deal then.
Yeah.
You know, it was a monster thing.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I was never at the level you were, but I remember specifically going down to my dad's tool chest and, you know, soldering cords and wires and stuff. And it, you know, there's such an excitement to the whole process and a mystery, I think it is something that you were kind of touching upon there. And so at what point does it kind of shift to, well, okay, this is something that could maybe become lucrative, something I can start building as a career?
Fast forward a bunch of years.
Okay.
And I was fortunate enough to be involved and do work on the EVH detuner, the drop D.
Sure. Yeah. I wanted to talk about that. Yeah.
There was three of us involved in that. And that was a huge turning point because we took this thing that, you know, it sometimes worked, it kind of worked, and then we figured out how to make it work for the masses. You know, first we had to figure out how to make it work for him, and then how to make it like a commercial piece, the piece that it is today. And that became obviously what, you know, what it is today. That opened a lot of doors. You know, I always tell guys, that's kind of like, it's like that scene in Goodfellas. It's like being in the mob, but where he takes that girl out, where he takes the girlfriend out to dinner and like parks right in front, you know, walks in the side door, cuts through the kitchen. They set up a table, a bottle of champagne and a light appear on the table, and he's sitting side stage.
Right.
Once that D-Tuna was successful and was a thing, I was like in.
Yeah.
So a lot of that opened a lot of other doors and gave me a lot of freedom.
What approximate year was the D-Tuna invented? I guess it was
90, 91-ish right there. Right.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
That's the patent. And then we were doing it when he was at Music Man on his personal guitars, and it didn't go commercial until the first run of PV Wolfgang guitars.
So you said there was three guys involved in kind of coming up with this piece of equipment.
Yeah, it was me, one other guy, and obviously Eddie, who was, you know, the you took direction and idea from him. You know, you brainstorm, you go, well, here's, this does this and that does this. He's like, well, why don't you just do this?
Right. You
go, oh yeah, and it was a process. It was a process, and you know, obviously he took the lead, being who he is. And I remember early on making prototypes, and we would set up a bunch of guitars. And one day there was like four or five guitars there, and he said to me, "This one's perfect. That one sucks. That does this. No, no, no." He goes, "Make everything like that." And points to that first one.
Wow.
And, you know, you just followed him because obviously he knew. Forget what a great guitar player he was. His innovations in guitar building, his thought process in guitar building were equal. I mean, like a modern day Les Paul, you know, just changed the game on how guitars are literally manufactured today.
Right. Yeah. And I think I may have shared it with you. Maybe you shared it with me. Somebody shared it with me. Eddie Van Halen went to visit Ted Templeman not that long ago. Like, I want to say, I guess, what, 2019, late 2019 or something. And he was at Ted's apartment, and Ted had an old broken down guitar laying on the floor. And he said the next thing he knew, Eddie Van Halen was said, "You got a Phillips head," and was like working on the guitar.
I think it was Greg Renoff who
Greg
told
Renoff.
Yeah. And Greg is a spectacular guy who is a wealth of information, and just, it's great to hear things that I've never heard, you know, because Greg is like that kind of historian guy. But yeah, I heard that story, and I read that, and when I read it, I went, yeah, that's how he was.
Yeah.
That's exactly how he was.
So you working with Eddie was obviously a game changer in your life, your career. How does a guy approach Eddie? Like, how did you get to know him? How did you get to work on this innovative piece of equipment with
him? It's a great question. And the same guy in the story that I told earlier that got me to play guitar in high school was his guy and worked for him and made that introduction. And still, you know, that's still my best friend of 40 years.
Can you say who that is? Or
I don't even get it. He's not an internet guy, and he hates all this shit.
Fair enough.
So, yeah,
I respect
an industry guy that lays off the radar, that is probably the most brilliant tone gear guy I know.
Right on, right on. And nowadays, though, there are so many people that are endorsing your equipment and using your equipment. I'd love to talk about some of these other players that, I mean, are just my heroes, along, of course, with Eddie. But Warren DeMartini, a guy who, honestly, Adam, he does zero interviews. He used to do interviews, but like a guy, interview hunter like myself, always looking to interview my idols, no one can get this guy to talk. What is your relationship with Warren? How did you first meet Warren? And can you share any stories about how he likes his guitar set up or just anything about Warren? Because I'm crazy for Warren.
Warren is on my Mount Rushmore of guitar. And if you've asked me in high school or all the way through or even up to today, you know, my one and two on my Mount Rushmore are Warren and Eddie. And I was so fortunate, you know, along the way, after, you know, the company was growing and I had a really great stable of artists and all my heroes and guys I loved. And then, you know, about halfway through, a friend of mine was working for Warren and introduced me.
Okay.
And he said, you know, this is Adam, but we hit it off pretty quick. And I said, I'm going to put this one part in your guitar. And he's looking at me like, don't you dare, you know, no. Yeah. And he's like, my guitar sounds perfect. And I go, I'll put it in. And if you don't love it, I'll take it right out. And we're still friends. I don't care. I go, I'm just happy, you know, and, yeah. And we did it and he liked it. And we clicked and we went on and on. And then over the years, we became friends. And I just like Eddie, I look at Warren like, wow. I mean, this guy is just, for me as a guitar player, you know, just the pinnacle of playing, and as a guy, the nicest guy. And we started working together more. And then I went out to LA and I went to his house. And I remember one day we were working on the famous Snake guitar.
Wow.
And we were testing a lot of different parts. And, you know, I would put on a combination of parts. And first he recorded the guitar as is. And I'm like, wow, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do to this. And then I put on a different configuration. We recorded the same things. We put on a different, I did five different configurations of parts on the same guitar. And he recorded the guitar each time. So by the end of the day, we were listening back to everything and decide, I had made notes of which tracks were, you know, which parts. And we narrowed it down to two. And he said to me, he goes, well, which one do you think sounds better? And I said, it doesn't matter. I go, it's your right. guitar. Right. Who cares what I think? You're Warren DeMartini. And he goes, I like this one. And that's what I liked. And it was, for me, again, like working with Eddie, like working with so many other guys that I grew up, you know, going to their concerts, posters on my wall, sleeping in parking lots to buy tickets.
Yeah,
to
the man, I remember.
And now I'm sitting
there. Where'd you grow up,
like,
man?
Yeah, and then I'm sitting there like playing guitar with them or working on their guitar. I've been doing this a long time. I pinch myself every time.
Yeah.
And go like, I still don't believe this. And Warren is one of those guys. And yeah, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. He's an elusive guy. I think he's a very private guy. And, you know, I could tell you as a person, he's just a stellar human. He's so pleasant and nice and zero ego and just the nicest guy. And then I watch him play guitar, you know, or I'll go out and tech for him here and there yeah. as a favor to help out. And I stand there with my jaw on the floor like, I don't believe what I'm saying.
Yeah. And just so much personality that guy has on the guitar. It's ridiculous. I do want to really plug the company and the website and all that, because I urge any guitar player out there to get their hands on some of this stuff that you make. And but first, let me ask you, where did you grow up, Adam?
I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia.
Okay.
Like still Philadelphia, but not the city Philadelphia. And then when I moved, like I said, right at the beginning of high school, I moved to a suburb called Abington. So, Abington,
okay.
And now I'm, you know, in the next couple of suburbs over in that area.
Yeah. The Empire Rock Club. I'm sure you spent some.
Listen,
time
the Empire, the Empire was my hunting ground as a teenager. You know, that was our, like, you know, what Lemoore's was to Brooklyn and what all the LA clubs, we had the Empire. and the Philly bands. And, you know,
I saw quite a few shows at the Empire. I lived in the Princeton area for a while, so we would sometimes venture down there to see. I remember seeing Flotsam and Jetsam there, Heaven's Edge, like Brittany Fox.
Cinderella.
I never saw Cinderella there, but for sure. Yeah.
You know, and then the New York bands would like slip down, you know, you would get a White Lion and, you know, all the New York guys we would go back and forth. The Empire was our home ice for it was equal to Lemoore's and Princeton. I'm right across the water. So FU Tone is in Washington Crossing. Literally a stone's throw over the water to Princeton.
I'm down there frequently. My mom lives in Frenchtown. And,
oh, dude, come to the office.
I'm I will. I will take you up on that for sure. My brother's was in New Hope. Now he's in Doylestown. So a lot of family down right that there. Area. But the website, fu-tone.com. And on the website, you have all your products, and can you talk about some of your other products? We've mentioned the D-Tuna, which of course you designed with Eddie and one other person who shall remain nameless, but what are some of the other products you could tell us about?
FU Tone started out as a tremolo upgrade company. So the core of my business is making upgraded better parts for locking tremolos, all locking tremolos, you know, from Ibanez to Godot to Floyd to this to that, all of them. And the main component is the block underneath the tremolo. It was the first thing I did, and it was the weakest link in the chain of all tremolos, even non-locking tremolos like Stratocaster tremolos, which I make an upgrade block for that as well. The block underneath the tremolo is usually too small, too thin, made of shit. Can I curse? Made of crappy material that just doesn't resonate and sound good. So what I did was I made the block bigger to fill out the cavity. Then I made it of more resonant materials like brass, like copper, like titanium, to give different sounds and more resonance. From the block, I moved out to the rest of the components of the tremolo, like the saddle insert. So instead of cheap metal that, you know, expands, cracks, or gets stuck in the saddle, I do titanium, I do naval brass, you know, colored titaniums. I do the posts in titanium, the screws, springs. So the springs that rattle and make a reverb noise through your signal the entire time, I make silent springs and heavier duty springs. Then I went to the claw, cheap pop metal. We do it in brass, we do it in titanium, on and on and on until it sounded better, it functioned better. And then I went on to design and make my own complete tremolo unit. That was the core for locking. Then I went to, like I said, Stratocaster trems. I have stuff for hardtails, Les Pauls and Tellys and acoustic guitars. So instead of cheap plastic bridge pins, I make brass, titanium. And it just makes your guitar resonate, sound better, more definition, more sustain, more clarity. That's
right
the
on.
Entire mission of FU Tone.
Now, are there guitars that come with your products installed on them, or is it okay?
For the most part, you add it, and I'll tell you why. So just like I talked about the revolution in the 80s, where you had guys like Wayne Charvel and Grover Jackson trying to build a better mousetrap, they made a better guitar. Well, that guitar costs more money to make. They used better wood. They made it here. They took more care. They had better paint. They bought better pickups. They bought better tuners. They built a better mousetrap. But guess what? It cost more money. So I have a million guys that are still trying to build a better mousetrap. A ton of boutique builders that will call me up and go, you know, I'm building a better mousetrap. I need a better bridge than I can buy everywhere else. And we design a bridge for this net. The bigger companies will offer it through the custom shop because it's a more expensive option. Some of the bigger companies, you know, it's not about, is it the best there is? Well, no, it's about how much money can we make?
Right.
And I understand that. And I get it. I had a big meeting with a big company 2 weeks ago for a huge artist. They're doing a So I have a huge artist that uses my parts on his bridge. There, it's a new company for him. They're going to build a signature guitar. They said, well, we need what's on his guitar for this expensive signature guitar. And I had a meeting with them and I sent them, you know, the pricing. And they're like, that's ridiculous. I go, well, that's what your guy uses.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Well, no, you know, we could get a cheaper version of that. I'm like, you can, but that's what your guy uses.
Right. Yeah.
And so I do understand the disconnect of commerce and art and big business and big box and widgets and spreadsheets. Whereas what they will never understand is I get 10 emails a day, 10 calls, 10 this of going, I just bought a so-and-so signature guitar. I know he uses your stuff. What's on his guitar? Because that's what I'm going to put on my guitar.
Yeah.
You know, and fill in the blank of any artist on the roster who has a signature guitar. I get that message. And I go, well, here's what so-and-so uses. And they buy it anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is an expensive option, but I do repeat this every day as well. I go, Ferraris are expensive too.
Yeah, sure.
You want to know why they're expensive? Because they're awesome. Yeah. That's why they're expensive.
I got to ask you, just, this is somewhat random and we are going to have to wrap it up soon, but there's always been this, not always, but I've heard some people argue between wireless and a cord and which sounds better. Now I've noticed even with my headphones, when they're Bluetooth, I swear they don't sound as good as the wired headphones. Do you believe that you can get a better sound out of a guitar when it is wired to an amp?
100% yes, okay. In my opinion. Yeah, there's great wirelesses that sound great and they do good. And 99.5% of the people on the other side of the speaker don't know the difference of what they're listening to.
Right,
but I know the guy with the guitar over his shoulder does. And yeah, it does. And I'll give you a very brief Eddie story. One day we were doing a thing and we had a couple of different cables. It was a dealer demo at a NAMM thing. And he came in and he played the guitar and hooked up the first cable and he hooked up the second. And the cables weren't even that far apart, you know, yeah, lengthwise. And he goes, oh, no. Back to the shorter cable, you know, major really? Difference.
Wow.
Know? Dog hearing for sure. And I've got guys on the roster that definitely have dog hearing. I prefer the sound of a cable, of course.
Yeah. You know, and it's just amazing. All these little things you mentioned, the springs in, you know, in the tremolo system, all this stuff adds to the sound.
It's a link in your chain. Everything is a link in your chain. They're not all the same size link, but they're a link. You know, think about this. Think about if you had, you know, a $10,000 boutique guitar, some spectacular amp that you always wanted, some vintage amp. You had these great boutique pedals and you hooked it up with that $2 cable that comes with a Sears guitar.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weak link in your chain. You know, there's I resell a lot of items on my site that I think are quality items. There's a company that makes a really expensive power cable. So from the back of your amp to the wall. And I took a regular cable, like you would plug, like that Marshall behind you.
Right.
You know, there's a regular cable that I have a million of them laying around here. And then I played the amp with a guitar. I pull the cable. It's called Wire World. I plug in this expensive power cable. It's like you got out of, you know, a Hyundai and got into a Ferrari. It right. makes it, everything in your chain makes a difference.
Right. Wow. That is a good place to end it. But I do have one last question. You are tuned in to the guitar playing world. And a lot of these guys that we love and that you've done work with, from, you know, George Lynch to Eddie Van Halen to Warren DeMartini to Gary Holt, all people you've done work with, and dozens of others, which you guys can all see on futone.com. But are there any? What's that?
FU-tone.
Thank you. FU-tone.com. Are there any youngins who are really blowing you away right now that maybe you're even doing some work with? I'm talking, when I say youngins, I mean under 35, you know.
Yes. And I have a few, and I get emails every day and social media messages every day, like, hey, listen to this, check this out. And a million kids could just shred it up now. Yeah. And kids are so good and different than when we were. They have YouTube and this, that,
right,
and the gear. And I don't want to short anyone, because I've signed on as young artists, you know, a dozen kids that I think are spectacular, but one in particular that will come to mind, and you'll appreciate it because he's from Princeton.
All right.
This kid named Jack Devine.
Wow. And okay.
I met Jack at a NAMM show a couple of years ago in Nashville, and I was walking, and I was on the phone with an important call, actually, to Los Angeles. And I see this long blonde hair kid, you know, fresh face, young kid walking with a guitar out of a case. And it's like, it's a complete Frankenstein guitar with a reflector in the pickup cavity, and
wow,
a complete piece of shit. And I'm on the phone, and I pull the phone away from my ear. I go, hold on. I go, dude, nice guitar. And he goes, hey, you're the FU Tone guy.
Right.
And I stayed in my phone call. I'm like, I'll call you back. And I said, hey, nice to meet you. And I struck up a conversation for a few minutes with him. And he goes, yeah, I'm not far from you. I'm in Princeton. Da, da, da. Jump ahead. I checked him out. This kid, everyone can play, but this kid has such a touch and such a fire. And he's a cross between a young Eddie Van Halen and Warren DeMartini, because he plays with such skill and ability, but he also plays with a freedom that says, this isn't how hard I practice to learn this.
Right.
He can just flat out, it's coming to him. Mm. And he's fluid and young and fast and fresh, but doesn't miss. And he also has a vintage gear guy, to the point of, this kid plays 100-watt super lead.
Right.
He plays, wow, wet, dry, wet. He's not playing, you know, through the modern. And I think this kid has great chops, great ability, great writing ability, and is well on his way. Complete package, this kid.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
Jack Devine. Check him out on Instagram.
I'm going to be Googling him as soon as we get off this Zoom call. Jack Devine from Princeton, where my dad lives. My dad's in Princeton. So yeah, I got family all over that area. But great stuff. And again, FU-Tone. And social media, Adam?
Yeah, Instagram, FU Tone. I guess you just search it on all of them. Same with Twitter. I think Twitter is FU. I don't know. Just search FU Tone or hashtag FU Tone.
And we will link all in the show notes on talkingmetal.com. We'll have all the socials and the website linked. And for all you guitar players, I highly recommend you get some FU Tone on your guitar today, because it's great stuff. I have it. You took one of my Charvels and hooked me up a couple years back. And
I give you some props for a second.
Oh, sure.
You're plugging me.
Of course.
So let me tell you, and I've known you a long time, and we're bros, and I think you're great, but that's all personal. On a professional level, I think what you do and what a handful of guys do to keep this alive, to spread the message, to support music, to support, yeah, it's nice that you'll promote my company, that's wonderful, but what's more important is, and you and Eddie Trunk and guys that are true fans of what we're talking about, and the guys that just bring it to everybody honestly, clear, in an open format and forum, is a beautiful thing, because this is what keeps what I say real music, real gear, real everything going, because it's constantly getting knocked down and devoured by the big industry. What you do is a service to all of us, just as music fans, as musicians, and just guys that all dig the same thing, because if it weren't for things like this, we wouldn't have it. It would go back underground. And I think what you do is spectacular.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
About time someone plugged you back.
Yeah. I'll take it. I'll take every word. No, it means a lot, Adam. Thank you so much. And again, I really hope that we are back hanging at a show sometime soon. Sometime soon. It's looking good. Things are going the right direction. So I'm ready to rock. I got my vaccine, so I'm ready to go. I'll go to a show right now. So, yeah.
Well, come visit, please.
Yes. Seriously, my family's all over that area. So I'm down there frequently. Washington Crossing, you said? Yep.
Yeah, right next to New Hope.
All right. All right. Big thanks to Chris Aiken and Adam Reaver from FU Tone and Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show for joining me on this episode. Thanks to you for listening. Consider supporting me on Patreon. If you do the $5 a month tier, I will mail you out a Talking Metal t-shirt anywhere in the world. Plus, you get numerous bonus podcasts. You get the Mark Striegel podcast. You get the recap show that Victor does. And it's... Some people think the podcasts I do on Patreon is the best stuff I do. And yeah, so there you go. It's probably because I'm totally off the hook, man. Feel like not a lot of people listen to it, so I can say whatever the hell comes into my mind. And I have gotten in trouble for some of that stuff. So anyways, check me out on Patreon, on the private podcasts on Patreon. $2 a month gets you in the door there, all right? So we'll see you there. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.